Chapter 14. As had become her ritual since returning from the convoy ambush, Jaina would search out the officer of the watch every 4 hours to learn if the Falcon had been heard from. Then she would spend the next hour or so on one of Raoul Roost's observation viewports, gazing at the incoming traffic and stretching out with the Force, in the hope that one of the moving lights might return her touch or convey some hint of familiarity. She was about to abandon the effort that afternoon when a swiftly moving ship caught her eye. If there was a spaceborne equivalent of a swoop, Jaina figured she was looking at it. A cramped cockpit anchored to incongruous ion fusion and hyperdrive engines, the small craft was inbound and on a trajectory for Raoul Roost's primary docking bay. Jaina set off for the bay, hurrying down the attack cruiser's sterile passageways and offering only the hastiest of answering salutes to passing non-coms. By the time she had descended from the landing bay's service gantry, the craft's human pilot was on deck and taking off his scratched and dented helmet. His hair was red and shaggy, and his face was wildly freckled. Made up of garments borrowed from at least 3 separate units, his flight uniform was soiled and patched, and his boots were as mismatched as the engines of his ship. The blaster on his hip was even more ancient than Han's. When Jaina intercepted him in the landing apron, he offered a crisp salute. "Where are you arriving from, Lieutenant?" she shouted above the din of warming engines, repair work, and launches.
"Kalula Orbital, Colonel."
Noting Jaina's confusion, he added,
"Tyan Hegemony. I've a message from the commanding officer for Galactic Alliance Command."
Jaina moved closer to him.
"Your courier?"
"Yes, sir."
"Then I'll show you to Admiral Creefe's cabin."
Clearly the officer puzzled him, but he thanked her out of respect.
"That's really not necessary."
"I insist." Jaina motioned to the passageway hatch and fell into step beside him.
"When did you leave Kalula?"
she asked, when they could finally speak without shouting.
2 days ago, local. No hostile contacts along the way. But my ship had some drive problems."
"Did any ships land at Kalula before you launched?"
"Ships?"
"A banged-up YT-1300 freighter in particular?"
"No."
"You're sure?"
"I'd have remembered a YT-1300, sir."
"What's the situation at Kalula?"
The lieutenant glanced around.
"I don't know that I'm at liberty," he began, then shrugged.
"What's it matter, right?
Commanding Officer Garay wants the Admiral to be advised that unless we can be reinforced and reprovisioned, we're likely to fall to the Yuuzhan Vong."
Jaina felt her pulse quicken.
"I'm sorry to hear that."
He stopped abruptly. "If it's all right with you, I'll go the rest of the way on my own. The sooner I deliver the message, the sooner I can get back to Kalula."
Jaina nodded.
"May the Force be with you, Lieutenant."
"Same with you." Jaina watched him rush off. For the first time in a long while, she felt isolated and fearful. Still no word from Jason, Luke, or Mara. And now her father and mother were missing, possibly marooned in some remote star system. When she tried to reinforce the sense that they were all right, dreadful images whirled in her mind. And when she called to Leia through the Force, she received no response. She began to understand how her parents must have felt when their children had embarked on the mission to Mirker. Anakin killed, Jason missing. Jaina fleeing for the Hapes Consortium in a pirated Yuuzhan Vong vessel. It was difficult enough being a teenager and worrying about your parents' safety. But being a parent and worrying about your kids had to be even worse. As Han had said on Anakin's death, "A father isn't supposed to outlive his children." Jaina's thoughts turned briefly to her Uncle Luke and Aunt Mara. They had left their infant son, Ben, in the care of Cam and Tion, at the Hidden Maw installation. But they had to be wondering, worrying. Sometimes even the Force couldn't protect a person from imagined fears. Jaina pondered if she would ever be able to raise a family, to cope day to day with the concern that her child would fall victim to illness or accident, make a wrong choice, or be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Dizzy at the thought, she leaned against the cold bulkhead. She heard someone call her by name and turned to see Jag hastening to her.
Tall and wiry, with a shock of white in his black hair, he was the son of Soontir Fell and Seol Antilles, both of whom had elected to remain in Chiss space. Like his Chiss confederates in Vanguard Squadron, Jag wore a black uniform with red piping. "Are you all right?" he asked with uncommon alarm. "Did something happen?" They held each other for a moment before Jaina straightened.
"I'm fine." "No, actually, I'm not fine. I'm scared to death."
Jag's green eyes searched her face.
"Of what?"
She shook her head in uncertainty.
"Possibilities."
He took her right hand in his. "No message from your parents?"
"Nothing. And no word of Jason."
Jag firmed his lips. "I'm certain that all of them are fine." She frowned slightly.
"How are you certain? Or is that just something people say when they don't know what else to say?"
Jag blinked. Well, perhaps it's something of both. Do I know for a fact that Jason and your parents are all right? No. Does my heart tell me that they're all right? It seems to." Jaina smiled without mirth.
"No medicine like logic, is there?"
Jag's fine eyebrows beetled. A scar ran from his right brow almost to his hairline.
"I know you're right. I'm driving myself mad. Thanks."
He studied her. "What does the Force tell you?"
"Let's just say that the Force isn't painting as cheerful a picture as the one you just did."
Jag's expression grew skeptical. "You could be mistaken."
"You mean the Force might be throwing me a curve?"
She shook her head.
"It doesn't work that way."
"How does it work?" he asked stiffly. "Is it so different from intuition? Is there a stronger link between you and your parents than between me and my parents, simply because of the Force?"
Jaina shut her eyes. "Jag, please, this isn't a good time to be arguing."
He started to say something, then stopped and began again.
"Perhaps we can talk heart to heart when the war ends."
"Jag, I'm sorry. I'm just preoccupied."
"No, really. Besides, I'm slated to report to General Bell Iblis. I'll look for you later."
As he started away, she almost went after him, but thought better of it.
What was happening? Was Jag drifting away from her as well? Was she drifting away from him?
Or was her relationship with him going to turn out to be another of the war's odd pairings? Another reversal born of desperation? In either case, it certainly had been an unexpected development. Since events in the Hapes Consortium, they had been growing more familiar with each brief encounter. They had seemed to be falling in love. Danny Quee had told her that one shouldn't be too analytical about love, that rational thinking was the quickest way to rout affection. But Danny, a scientist who did little else but analyze, was no one to talk. And how could someone not wonder about wartime romance? Because they so often emerged out of a desire to live to the fullest, wartime affairs were notorious for being as short-lived as explosions in deep space. People tended to skip all the usual stuff and fly straight to the heat. But how could you trust your emotions at a time when any day might be the last? For yourself, your family and friends, your comrades. What might have happened had she and Jag gotten to know each other in peaceful times? What would have accounted for their shared experiences? Hollow presentations? Picnics? Getaways on tourist worlds? She shook her head. Maybe she was being too hard on them. Take her parents, for instance. They had met, fallen in love, and married during the worst of times, and everything had worked out great for them. So it could work. But was she trying to emulate them in some way? Hey, soldier! Kip Duron passed her on the outside and put his arm around her shoulders. Fit, sharp-featured, and dark-haired, he had surrendered the scowl that for years had been his signature expression. Reflexively, Jaina curled her arm around his waist and leaned against his chest. The chest of a man she had once slapped across the face, but who had later become a kind of mentor to her, especially in helping her navigate the emotional storm that had attended Jason's
unexpected return from Yuuzhan Vong held Coruscant a year earlier. Kip brought them to an abrupt halt and turned slightly to gaze at her.
If it's any consolation, kid, I'm worried too.
Jaina smiled and laughed shortly.
I don't have to say a thing, do I?
Kip shook his head and brushed his hair away from his eyes.
Everything tells me that Jason is okay, but your parents are in trouble. They've been getting into too many tight situations lately, and now they're really in the thick of it.
Jaina felt stronger for Kip's having articulated her fears. For a short time, she had thought she could fall in love with Kip, but those feelings had passed, and ever since then they had settled into a close and comforting friendship.
I was just talking with a courier who arrived from a station in the Tian hegemony, she said in a rush. I don't know why, but I think they're there.
Kip considered it. If they are, then I guess I'm wrong about them squaring off against the Yuuzhan Vong.
Jaina shook her head. That's just it, Kip. Kalula Orbital is under heavy siege. From what the courier said, I think the station might already have been overrun. If I knew for sure, I'd leave right now.
Kip took her hand. Let me know if you need a wingmate. Hans Blasterbolt caught the Yuuzhan Vong in his unprotected armpit, twirling him fully around and sending him plummeting from the shoulders of two warriors who had been providing unintentional support. With the immediate threat eliminated, the faceless rocket man raised his left arm and fired a small grappling hook from his forearm gauntlet. The hook found purchase on an expansion girder, instantly towing him to the ceiling of the hold, out over the extended arms of swarming warriors, and through flights of blunt amphistaffs. Clambering into a crouch on the girder, he gazed down on his would-be captors, then armed his backpack missile launcher.
He's going to fire!
One step ahead of C-3PO, Han and Leia each grabbed one of the droid's arms and yanked him down to the deck. The projectile exploded in the center of the hold, flattening everyone within a radius of 10 meters. 50 or more stunned or dying Yuuzhan Vong warriors formed the circumference of the detonation zone. But reinforcements were already on the way. Han heard them surging down the corridor, crying for blood. He got to his feet, then helped Leia and C-3PO to theirs. Simultaneous with the snap hiss of Leia's lightsaber came the drone of launched thud bugs. Leia fielded those she could. Taken by surprise, a dozen Kalula soldiers were dropped in their tracks. The volley of deflected bugs flew back down the corridor at the approaching Yuuzhan Vong, only to be returned by several warriors at the head of the pack. Han caught a glimpse of five comparatively short warriors, smeared head to toe in black blood rather than sheathed in the usual arthropod armor. Odder still was the way they were holding their amphistaffs to parry thud bugs and blaster bolts.
They're using them like lightsabers, he said.
That seems to be the idea, Leia replied breathlessly.
Han shook his head in incredulity. More new models?
I don't think we should wait around to ask.
The Mandalorian armored cadre apparently felt the same. Taking aim on a portion of bulkhead close to the deck, two of the troopers used missiles to blow a gaping hole into the adjoining hold. The Kalula defenders began to scramble through, with C-3PO, Leia, and Han bringing up the rear. They raced through the adjacent hold and into a wide corridor, lowering blast shields wherever they encountered them. Greeted with an intersection, Han knew enough to ask.
That way, C-3PO said.
Han gave a last glance at the armored fighters, then turned to follow Leia and C-3PO. The side corridor led directly to the connector that ran between Kalula's number 3 and 4 modules. Outside the tube's curved, transparasteel walls, laser bolts and plasma projectiles cleaved the darkness. Coral skippers and starfighters chased one another in chaotic circles. The volcano-like launchers of enemy capital ships fired again and again. Han, Leia, and C-3PO hadn't set foot inside the number 4 module when something shook the entire station.
The Ichna, Han said.
Leia agreed.
You know how hard it is to satisfy those things.
Farther along, Garay's meaty adjutant motioned them from the pack of withdrawing soldiers.
Captain, Princess Leia, the Falcon is ready for departure.
Han stared at him.
You've got to be kidding. He gestured broadly. It's worse out there than in here.
I concur, sir. Nevertheless, she's patched up and ready to go.
Nowhere near good as new, but you should be able to jump her to Mon Calamari in a couple of micro-jumps. Han and Leia traded doubtful looks.
Each officer we rescued from Salvaris could rally 10,000 additional troops to our cause, Leia said.
Ultimately, Han nodded. A bunch of people a lot smarter than me figured this out, so I guess we might have to trust that they're right.
Leia smiled, spoken like a true enlisted man.
Garay's adjutant directed them back to where the Falcon was berthed. With nearly every spaceworthy craft launched, the place was practically deserted. Kraken, Page, and the rest of the Salvaris roster were clustered at the foot of the landing ramp. The station's klaxons began to blare triplets. Garay's adjutant cursed, then adopted a resigned expression.
The commander has issued the evacuation order.
Han nodded cheerlessly.
You have to know when to fold.
I'll be leaving you here.
Han saluted him. We'll win this thing yet, Chief. He turned to give the Falcon a quick glance. Leia noted Han's discouraged look.
Well, he did say limp her to Mon Calamari.
Crawls more like it. The mechanic responsible for the several add-ons emerged from beneath the starboard mandible.
We spared as much blaster gas as we could for your quad lasers, but I'd go light on them if I were you.
He gazed up at the Falcon and smiled.
Great ship. Good journey.
Han pumped the man's hand in thanks. A powerful explosion rattled the bay. Paint chips and other objects showered from the vaulted ceiling.
Everybody get on board, Han said, before we end up EV without a ship.
When Posh Kraken and a few other officers didn't move, he stormed over to them.
You waiting for a formal invitation?
Kraken almost smiled. With all due respect, Han, we've decided to remain here and do what we can. Han made his lips a thin line.
Posh, this is bigger than Kalula, and you know it. Alliance Command is counting on you people to rally support in your home systems. Besides, you can't make a difference here. Those are evacuation klaxons you're hearing.
Han's right, Major, Leia said.
Kraken still didn't move.
We'll take our chances, Princess.
She blew out her breath.
Your father's never going to forgive us, Posh.
He'll understand.
Han nodded.
Then may the Force be with all of you. In other circumstances, I might make the same choice.
He turned, and without a backward look, hurried Leia and C-3PO up the landing ramp.
At the top, he waved Paige and the rest of the officers into the forward cargo compartment. He told Leia to begin the startup sequence, and he sent Cockmame and Meowal to the gun turrets. He ran to the stern to check the status of the escape pods, then raced forward to the cockpit. By the time he arrived, Leia was strapped in and the repulsor lift was cold-started. Han leapt into the pilot's chair while Leia lifted the Falcon, turned her about, and sent her streaking through the MagCon field. Local space was cross-cut with magma projectiles and turbolaser bolts. Dead ahead, the bloated Ichna floated motionless in space. Amid a debris cloud created by coral skippers that had thrown themselves against Kalula's shields. X-wings and other starfighters drifted lazily. Three of the station's modules were wide open to vacuum and expressing what little atmosphere they still contained. Below, explosions were blossoming on the beige and green surface of Kalula itself, with wounded coral skippers plunging into the atmosphere like fiery meteors. Han watched a dozen escape vehicles launch from an undamaged module. Kalula was finished.
Three skips converging on us, Leia glanced at him. It's our old friends.
Han's eyes darted to the authenticator screen. The ones that tracked us from Salvaris. What is this, a personal vendetta?
Maybe they don't like our paint job.
Then I'm on their side. He clamped his hands on the yoke.
Hang on.
Han leaned toward the intercom. Watch the fuel levels, you two. Last thing we need is to be left high and dry. He glanced over his left shoulder. Jump coordinates for Mon Calamari coming in. Leia studied the Nava computer display.
We'll have come around to 303. That means back toward the station.
I was afraid of that.
An explosion shook the ship before it was halfway through the turn.
There goes the only new piece of equipment they installed, but we can get by without it.
I'm counting on that, dearest.
One of the curved-tailed, tandem-piloted coral skippers appeared in the wraparound viewport, coming straight at the Falcon.
Take the shot, Han said into the intercom.
Singularities formed in advance of the approaching skip, but sheer firepower overwhelmed them, and the vessel came apart in roiling fire.
Cockmame is really getting good, Leia said.
Han shook his head negatively.
That wasn't him.
He leaned back in his seat to glance through the upper panes of the viewport. A classic Firespray-class security patrol craft shot overhead. A cross-shaped ship affixed to an oval engine suite, it was followed by four gladiators, so named because they looked like swords thrust to the hilt through circular shields.
It is Fett, and he's clearing a lane for us.
Han snorted.
Just like him to make sure he has the upper hand on a debt.
Incoming transmission, Leia said, from the Firespray.
Boba Fett's voice crackled through the comm.
Just wanted to remind you, Solo, that my personal fight was always with the Jedi. You were nothing more than cargo.
Han snorted. For what it's worth, Fett, you were never more than a nuisance.
Fett laughed shortly. To better days, Captain.
Count on it. Sowing mines far to port and starboard, the Firespray continued to break a trail for the near-weaponless Falcon. Then Fett tipped the patrol craft's short wings in salute and vanished.
Ready for light speed, Han said.
Leia collapsed back into the co-pilot's chair, shaking her head back and forth.
I have now officially seen and heard everything.
She turned to Han with a half-smile.
I'm almost ready to believe this war will actually end.
With the Jedi Knights reduced to half their strength since the start of the war, Luke Skywalker's seven incommunicado in the unknown regions, some, including the 20 or so Jedi children, still sheltered at the Maw installation, and others participating in various Galactic Alliance military operations, Kenth Hamner could gather only a dozen Jedi for the meeting held in Tresina Lobby's quarters on Mon Calamari. Though understated, the circular room at the top of Coral City's Quarren Tower was spacious and enjoyed a 360-degree view of the tranquil sea and sparkling reefs. In the continued absence of Luke and Saba, and with Kip frequently flying missions with the dozen, Tresina Lobby had become an important voice on Cal Omis's advisory council. Achieve, she had a narrow face with angular features and short black hair. Tresina, Markra Mejiv, and Silgal, the Mon Calamari Jedi healer, had spent the morning preparing food, and the circular table in the sunroom was already spread with the appetizing results of their labors by the time Kenth and the others arrived. Gradually, they seated themselves at the table, except for Kenth, who was too restless to eat or stay put. Clockwise from Tresina's armchair sat Silgal, Jaina, Kip, towering ginger-furred Lobaka, the Twi'lek female, Alima Rar, salt-and-pepper-haired combat instructor, Kyle Katarn, Chandrillan, Octa Ramus, slight and terribly scarred Waxarn Kel, and young and darkly handsome Zek.
Some of you might not be aware that operative Baljas Arnjak didn't return from Wraith Squadron's infiltration mission to Coruscant, Kenth said as he circled the table. Bendy Drayson was supposed to have remained on world, but it was Arnjak who stayed, and has been furnishing the Alliance with intelligence ever since, mostly with the help of a kind of droid fungus he and his teammates let loose during the mission.
Kenth came to a stop between Silgal and Jaina, then leaned forward, planting the palms of his hands on the table.
Arnjak's latest report states that Yusha, the so-called prophet of the heretics, was recently seen on Coruscant. By recent, I mean within the past local week, since it took that long for a string of couriers to move the information from the Corps to Mon Calamari.
Has his identity been verified? Kyle asked from across the table.
Kenth nodded.
Which means that he either didn't go to Zonama Seacoat with Corrin and Tahiri,
or that he returned without them, Kip said. Is there some way we can establish whether he arrived back on Coruscant in the same vessel everyone left on?
No, Kenth said.
Or if they even reached Zonama Seacoat, Lobaka's voice issued from his droid translator. Kenth glanced at the Wookiee.
Exactly. Unlike most of the Holonet transceivers, Esfandia is still functioning, if inconsistently. So assuming nothing has befallen Jade Shadow, Luke and Mara should have been able to contact us.
We've waited long enough, Octoramus said. It's time we sent a ship. Everyone fell silent for a long moment, then Silgal said,
I doubt that we'll find Zonama Seacoat at the coordinates to which we've been transmitting messages. I suspect that the living world has moved.
Based on what? Alima asked. Silgal spread her webbed hands.
On what the Force tells me.
Kenth glanced around the table.
Do any of you also feel that way?
I do, Jaina said. Jason feels farther away than he did when we received Luke and Mara's transmission.
She shook her head somberly.
I don't feel him as distinctly.
Kenth inhaled with a purpose.
That's good enough for me.
He compressed his lips.
I say we have a talk with the Prophet.
Kip snorted. I agree, but getting onto Coruscant won't be easy, even with Peace Brigade and trade ships being allowed to land there. Alima looked from Kip to Kenth.
Could we appeal to Alliance Command for help in inserting some of us?
Kenth shook his head.
Not without explaining what we're after, or why we didn't inform Command that we'd sanctioned Corrin and Tahiri's mission to Zonama Seacoat. If intelligence learns that we passed on a chance to capture a Shaper, a priest, and the Prophet of all people.
We could go to Wedge, Makra Mejiv suggested. Kenth nodded.
We could, and I'm sure he'd do everything in his power to get us onto Coruscant. But I don't want to put him in the position of having to lie to Sav and Crife.
I agree, Silgal said. Trissina nodded.
Likewise.
This is beginning to sound like Mirkur all over again, Kip said. Zek looked at him.
If Anakin hadn't taken on that mission, all of us might be Voxen fodder by now.
Zek's right, Octoramus said. If it sounds like Mirkur, it's because we have no choice but to go.
Kenth straightened and adopted a determined expression.
We'll give Master Skywalker a week. If we don't hear from him by then, I'll assemble a strike team.